Welcome to Pivotal. I'm Hayat Gallo, Corporate Vice President for Commercial Solution Areas at Microsoft. I work with customers around the globe to transform their business through technology. At the center of every transformation are people who give technology its purpose. And that doesn't change with the advent of AI. It's actually being accelerated. People spark visionary ideas for leveraging technology. The release of AI technology like ChatGPT this year is exciting, but it has led to big questions as we grapple with the best way to harness those tools to enhance and support the people behind the work. We like to talk about technology. I love to talk about it. But we often forget that technology is most effective when it supports people with purpose. This season, we'll demystify AI by talking to the innovators using new AI technology to uplift their industries and augment their people, from education to journalism to surfing. And it just illustrates what AI is about. Everybody thinks it's about tech. No, everybody's using AI. And that's what we're going to show you on this season. What if every student had access to quality education? Today, we're looking at a story from the United Arab Emirates that asks this question. Their Ministry of Education is leaning into AI technology with the ambitious goal of rolling out an AI tutor for all their students nationwide. This is a story with serendipity. The Minister of Education had a vision to invest in improved learning outcomes. And that commitment coincided with the release of ChatGPT and a fortuitous connection with an impressive 20-year-old UAE-based student who had already developed and tested a version of the tool the Ministry of Education was looking for. Raghad Abdullah Al-Jugaman, the Strategic and Future Planning Advisor at the UAE Ministry of Education, tells us how the ministry landed on one-on-one tutoring as a means to improve student learning outcomes.
We've been talking for decades about personalized learning, closing the learning gap. How can we provide access to quality education for everyone? How can we solve for teacher shortage, for teacher upskilling, for creating pathways for teachers? We've been looking at our curriculum, our skills that we focus on teaching our kids, etc. And along these years and the conversations that policymakers, the education sectors, teachers, parents, and everyone has a stake in the education system, one of these solutions that emerged was the access to one-on-one support, where students want to learn through the old school approach of just being with someone and this person will help them and mentor them based on what they need to learn specifically, which is going to be super personalized. There's a lot of evidence around how it helps students improve their learning outcomes. When you compare students who have access to private tutors, you will see improvement in their learning outcomes for up to like 12 percentage points from the ones who don't have access to tutors. But again, not everyone has access to these tutors. We at MOE are the custodians of the education system. We know that there is demand for private tutoring, but not everyone can get access to quality tutors and tutors who understand our students, who understand our curriculum. And we've been having discussions around this topic for some time, and we looked at different ways of solving for this.
Equitable access to education was something the Ministry of Education had been thinking about for a long time. And they looked at a lot of different possible solutions, including policies to regulate private tutoring, all in pursuit of finding the best way to support learning outcomes for all students.
We had a few conversations with different partners within the education space, within technology as well. One of them was Microsoft, who are our partners at MOE. And we're like, this is a problem that we want to solve for, right? We did our benchmarking. We looked at what other countries are doing. We looked at what the startup scene is about when it comes to online tutoring.
As these conversations were happening, OpenAI released ChatGPT in November 2022.
Everyone was talking about ChatGPT. A lot of government entities around the world were like, hey, no, what are we going to do with this new tool? Let's ban it. It's like cheating. How can we assess if our students are learning or not? It's like everyone's dealing with it like a problem that we need to solve. versus like, this is a new technology. This is a solution that, if utilized in the right way, can help us solve for the different challenges that maybe not everything, but will help us revolutionize the way that we teach and educate our kids. I remember the discussions that we were having with our partners at Microsoft, and then the idea emerged into, okay, we know that MOE wants to embrace generative AI in our education system.
It may sound simple, but it is not an obvious step. It's actually quite extraordinary when you think about it. A nationwide education system supported by their government has decided not to fight it, or at best, tolerate AI as part of its education system, but to lean in and embrace AI to revolutionize all that they do.
That was the first principle that we had as MOE, and His Excellency, the Minister of Education, talked about that as well. It was like, look, it's here. It's either that we adopt and we change to help our students to be relevant, or it's going to be there and we can't avoid it. And we will be irrelevant for our kids in that case. So if you look at, okay, we're embracing it, what does that mean? It means that we will find ways to integrate this within our system. And because we were already solving for access to tutoring and looking at different ways, we're like, what is the best way to introduce AI as well into our system? We don't want to come up with a solution just for coming up with a solution. We looked at our problems and we were like, okay, the first step is, yes, we endorse it. The second step is we need to review our policies, our guidelines in the education system and see how we can integrate it. And the third point was, okay, can we solve one of our key problems that we're facing right now with AI? And this is how the AI tutor emerged, because it will solve for a lot of things that still have restrictions and limitations, even if you would have a human-based platform.
With those three pillars in mind, their project started to take shape.
We want to support our students get the personalized learning that they need. We want to support our teachers as well, who are burdened with a lot of the admin work and also doing their best to support our students in the classroom. But again, when you're with a classroom, it's not the same as if you're doing it one-on-one. So how can we support our teachers know more about the students that they have in the classroom? And we started the conversations now around, we know our problem, we have our tech partner, and now we're looking for a developer who is going to develop this tool. And there was a strategic question of, should we develop it in-house as MOE, or should we look for a partner that would develop this with us? And His Excellency is a strong believer in us as regulators not getting into the business of what a tech startups are doing or supposed to do. So I started looking for potential partners and developers.
During our search, Regad came across a tool from a company called ASI that piqued her interest.
I started chatting with the tool. It was WhatsApp-based. If I remember correctly, I was asking about inflation. It felt like a human talking to me, to be honest. Sometimes you get super impatient with AI replies, right, and responses. You're like, no, I want to speak to a human. No, I keep repeating my question. It's like, it didn't feel like that at all. And this is what I loved the most about it.
I can't believe it, but Regad saved our very first conversation with the tool.
Hi, I'm Milo, a virtual 24/7 tutor. I'm an AI designed by Digest AI and can help you with your homework, essay outlines, quizzes, and more. Before you become my student, what's your name? And then I asked a few questions, and then it's like, by the way, I just work with MOE. And it's like, awesome. What do you think you will be needing the most help with? And what are your biggest problems? I was like, no, I want to connect with the human who created you. Great. I'll do my very best to help you. And I will get better at helping you. You can send an email to hello@digestai.com. And then I had the first conversation with Qudus. And I was like, is it just you, or is there anyone else joining the call? He's like, no, it's just me. And then I heard his story and I was like very impressed. And then I remember after the call, I was speaking to one of my colleagues and I was like, I think I just found our Mark Zuckerberg for the MOE. It was like very clear that We found our match. It was ASI. It was Kudus.
My name is Kudus Pativada. I'm the founder and CEO of ASI.
By the time Kudus Pativada and his company ASI caught the attention of the Ministry of Education at age 20, Kudus had already developed 3 apps in market, beginning when he was just 10.
I started learning how to code when I was about 8 years old. I was mostly developing games. So when I was 10 years old, I published my first game to the App Store, which was a clone of Flappy Bird. It was a really popular game at the time. I created sort of a more customizable clone of it. Ended up sort of building more games since then, continually building products throughout middle school, high school. And then right before ASI, I created a COVID-19 contact tracing platform that allowed students to anonymously notify their friends that they had COVID. There was a lot of stigma at the time, and that was sort of my first community-facing platform, which eventually led to my work on ASI and trying to sort of fix more issues within education.
Kudus' COVID-19 application won an award from the government, but he was already on the next idea. In early 2022, Kudus launched an AI-based application called Kado, which turned photos, documents, or PDF into flashcards.
It was an idea I had back when I was 14, but the tech wasn't there yet. The sort of core thesis, and it's the core thesis that holds true even today, was educational content is inherently inaccessible to people my age, right? The so-called TikTok generation. How do you convince this entire generation of kids who spends 3 hours watching 30-second videos to then end up reading a 300-page textbook in the same period of time? So that was sort of the core thesis, and still holds true today, and I expect that to hold true for the years to come. We started thinking about how do we make this educational content more accessible? So we looked at textbooks, and one of the biggest things or biggest drawbacks of textbooks was just purely length. It was so incredibly long that a vast majority of friends I had in high school didn't even use textbooks. They would just opt for watching YouTube videos or finding another resource that was much less sort of information dense. I built a very simple app that could take a picture of the textbook, and then initially it could just create summaries for you. So Kado in its first version was just a summary app. But at the time, sort of summaries were divided into two things. They were either abstractive or extractive. And a large area of machine learning was focused on extractive summaries. So just picking out the most relevant sentences. Me as a student, when I started playing around with these models, I realized that they weren't really summaries. They were just sort of rebuttals or repetitions of what's already in the text, but in a much shorter form. I wanted to see how we could reword the text how a human would, or how the best teacher in the world would, sort of personalized to me, and a summary that helps you understand something immediately. So we ended up, you know, stumbling upon language models. And this was back when GPT-2 was really popular, and it was still when GPT-3 from OpenAI was still in a waitlist. So language models certainly weren't popular at the time. And we ended up training a much smaller model that could create summaries. And then students sort of had this little wow reaction. I gave it to my friends in my economics class, and students were, you know, incredibly sort of blown away by the fact that, oh, this sounds like an actual human speaking to me. But they were just summaries created by this language model. It's very similar to the technology that powers, tools like ChatGPT today. We ended up working on that. And, you know, before I graduated, I ended up raising a little over $150,000 from Mark Cuban, who ended up becoming a really early investor purely from a cold email. Sean Patel, who was a founder of Prep Expert, and then my college counselor at the time, who was helping me write my essays.
Yes, you heard that right. Kudus cold emailed Mark Cuban and actually received a response, and a positive one.
I ended up taking a gap year to continue focusing on Kado. Saw a lot of potential there, and just the pure excitement of my friends and people around me was obviously very encouraging. So started doubling down on the platform. We ended up creating another model that could create flashcards from the textbook pages. So you take a page of a textbook, and then it would create flashcards with questions and answers for you instantly. So really trying to reduce the time it took for a student to understand something. After a few months of working on that, what we started to see was students had this incredible wow reaction, the same wow reaction that students had with ChatGPT or the other AI tools you have popping up today, but retention was still a weak point. After 30 days, as valuable as the app was, students just couldn't get themselves to be quote-unquote addicted to a platform that they'd have to sit down and take pictures of 5 different textbook pages and then wait for the flashcards to be generated and then study on their phone. That wasn't a behavior that was very primal to students. It was very sort of outside of what they were usually sort of doing in their study routines.
The next iteration of Kado, which was the version Regad initially used, came from an idea Kudus had while visiting family in India.
I gave my cousin the platform to use, and my cousin pretty much told me that this is a horrible app. I don't understand it at all. I mean, in India, you know, flashcards aren't really a thing. So yeah, he was very confused as to why this was even a platform. And it was a very well-designed app, an app that I'm still proud of to this day. But when I saw him using a tool like WhatsApp, he was very familiar with it. And keep in mind, this is a 13-year-old in rural India. He was using WhatsApp fluently. He was sending GIFs. He was creating group chats. He had no problems with it whatsoever. And I thought WhatsApp wasn't as well designed as our app. But what I sort of saw then was people our age, the new generation, it's quite hard to make them change habits. So we started looking at what other habits the students have in their study routines. A large part of their study routine was actually speaking to other people, their smartest friend in school or the teacher they're really close to or a tutor they pay for. And we were trying to find a way to replicate that, but something that's accessible 24/7 and is actually much more efficient and is accessible for a fraction of the cost of a personal tutor would be. So this was a few months before ChatGPT had come out. We ended up playing around with the chat-based interface. So essentially taking the work that we did with language models, but training them to be, you know, sort of fine-tuned for chat and make it behave as a tutor would. So that's how we started getting to work on the AI tutor itself prior to the UAE project. Towards the end of last summer, we sort of set out to say, what if we could actually commoditize such a benefactor in learning? And we ended up working on the AI tutor, ended up showcasing that at TechCrunch Disrupt, and then started being heads down in our development. Obviously, when ChatGPT had come out, the team was sort of a little worried. Now there's a $50 billion company building the exact same thing. So we were really heads down in education, started building out really key differentiators. And eventually, the Ministry of Education in the UAE took notice of that. And we were able to collaborate with the UAE National AI Tutor Project.
What happened with his cousin just reinforces the notion that things need to be very familiar if you want to drive adoption of an application. We've seen that time and time again as we look at how people can get people to use their applications. In this case, his cousin was familiar with WhatsApp and just couldn't understand this new UX that was presented to him. It is typical, and it was so smart for Kudos to actually change this approach accordingly. It seems the Ministry of Education couldn't have picked a better partner if they tried. Kudos is a recent graduate from the UAE. As a product of their education system, he understands the ecosystem very well. He's very close to the end users, having just graduated high school within the last year. And he already has developed a tool with proven interest and success with students.
They were not starting this from scratch with us. They have experimented already and they had developed a tool that thousands of students were using.
We sort of deployed our contact system on WhatsApp for students to play around with. That ended up unexpectedly going viral a little bit in areas like Africa and the Middle East, where we've been able to collect really high quality data and just really have user feedback to iterate upon. After ChatGPT had come out, we were really heads down on the technology, but we weren't really focused on productizing it. But we still needed fast user feedback cycles and being able to see what students think, being able to see if the work we were doing was really helping students or not. So we pretty much took the entire system and then we plugged it into WhatsApp so students could add a number on WhatsApp and just speak to it like they would to a human being. Obviously, they were well aware it was an AI, but students would pretty much add the number on WhatsApp, go back and forth with it. What ended up happening sort of early this summer and right before exam season was that students start sharing it with their friends quite frequently. We only gave it to a few hundred students, but that ended up going to tens of thousands of students around the world. And then started getting this really great usage data from areas like Africa, where traditional AI systems would be pretty inaccessible just from a pure lack of computers or not having Wi-Fi home. A tool like WhatsApp allowed us to take this really powerful technology and then deploy it in areas where even if you're on a 2G connection, you're able to sort of access it.
So again, here, we're seeing that to get a lot of people to use a technology, you need to find a UX that they're familiar with. And in this case, it's all about WhatsApp on a 2G connection. And it's very interesting to see the network effect here. It's not about forcing users to adopt the technology. In this case, users loved it and they got other people to use it. And then everybody was using it. That's the best case scenario when you're introducing a new application. Not only was the application working and spreading, it was reaching communities with historically less internet access and bandwidth. This story is interesting because it reminds you of AgriVee that we discussed earlier. They also shifted to using WhatsApp to reach farmers because farmers were familiar with WhatsApp. This is how they drove adoption of their application.
Our North Star, our mission is to give every student in the world a personal tutor. Some of the research that we do is around taking these large language models and making it accessible through in a low bandwidth region where you don't even need a 2G connection, but could you potentially access these really powerful tech with no Wi-Fi even? Could it be locally hosted on your device, or we're testing out some other methods related to that. So it ended up going slightly viral in Africa and Middle East. We started seeing some really good usage even in Europe. And that was one of the things that really helped us win the UAE contract because we were able to sort of show actual students using it and actual students saying, saying that they prefer this personalized system over even a very well-known tool like ChatGPT.
Even in ASI's initial testing of their AI tutor app, they saw promising initial results they couldn't have foreseen. For example, they found that over 95% of students at a medical school in Ghana were using the app.
So we had this like bulk of a medical school who were just using it purely for studying sort of things related to dentistry or surgeons studying for their exams. So that was really cool and super high impact. That's something we were really proud of. We also ended up seeing students in Lebanon who were using it while schools were closed. So they were actually using it as replacement for some of the sort of schooling that they were missing out on. So, most of the use cases are surrounding this after-school supplement. So a student comes home and they're trying to study their text, but they just simply don't understand it. They sort of go to our tool as a first stop.
They also saw students who described it as a tool they use in transit.
Students in the bus or students in the car when they couldn't have a big, heavy textbook with them, or they just sort of weren't satisfied with the other stuff they were using. It was quite interesting to see how diverse the use cases were. But at the end of the day, all of the students were trying to solve a very similar problem and have exactly the problem we intended for them to solve, which was how do we understand this one thing faster? Most of the use cases were sort of around that, but mostly after school learning supplement. How do I learn this thing? And then getting an answer as soon as possible, but also having fun as a companion of sorts. So we had these safety barriers in place, but a lot of students really just felt they had a really smart friend they could speak to.
Students were using it as a tutor, but also as a social outlet of sorts.
We were seeing some students who were using it upwards of 45 minutes a day, which is very similar to the usage you see on social media or social networks. We had a large cohort who was really just using the tool because they felt a little bit less lonely, which is also another high impact use case that was sort of a little away from our mission, but something that we were really proud of as well, where students were actually learning more as a result of feeling like they had this companion. So lots of interesting, diverse use cases, but most of it sort of tying back to this perfect, efficient after-school supplement that they don't have to pay for. So we were really confident in the approach we were taking, and that ended up sort of having this really great ripple effect into all of the other stuff we were working on.
ASI was able to bring all this work to Regat and her team, and now the task became, how do they create an AI tutor specifically designed for the students in the UAE?
A tool that speaks their language, because we're developing the tool now where it's bilingual. It speaks Arabic, Arabic, modern standard Arabic, and Emirati dialect Arabic, and English as well. And it's trained on our curriculum. So a tool that understands our students, understand how they speak, what they're supposed to learn, and it's very adaptive. It remembers them. It knows what they asked yesterday and the day before, and probably the things that they need to learn now, and the sequencing of our curriculum, and the areas that they are weak at, and the areas that they are excited about. So I don't think that you would be able to develop such a personalized tool without generative AI, especially now that we're focusing on creating this PLM, which is a personalized learning model for our students.
When ChatGPT had come out, it was sort of a huge wake-up call in the fact that on one side, there was this, what we thought at the time, a massive competitor, but ended up not really being a competitor. But on the other side, we saw the power of the technology itself.
Students were using ChatGPT at scale and deriving real value from it. But ChatGPT alone wasn't going to be the solution to individualized learning needs of the K-12 population in the UAE.
What we saw was the OpenAI models standalone weren't able to sort of provide the value that students needed. Today, if a student in grade 9 was to ask ChatGPT, what is inflation? And a student in grade 12 is asking the exact same question, they're getting the exact same answers. Or you could be doing a PhD asking the exact same question, you're getting the same answer as well.
So ASI and the Ministry of Education set out to build a much more personalized version of the tool.
I think what really interested them was the fact that not only were we at the frontier of the technology itself, we weren't just another large language model company that was just purely developing on an API. We were really building proprietary systems that could understand students better than most systems could, really help students in the Azure OpenAI service at its core, but building a context engine around it. One that was able to sort of accurately tell the model, the student's in grade 9, he's really good at these subjects, really bad at these subjects. This is how you make him better at these subjects. So we trained a profiling model in-house, and really the entire context engine, we try to keep it as in-house as possible. And then that sort of surrounds this core language model that today sits on Azure OpenAI service as a result of our partnership with Microsoft.
I think my favorite part about interacting with the tool is that it gives you examples that are very relevant to you. Like here, if you are in Dubai and you ask a math question, and you will get an answer about like Burj Khalifa. or if you ask a question about inflation, you will get the local currencies as reference. It's small things, but it's small things that also matter to our students and bring the curriculum to life.
For the first phase of development and testing for this UAE-specific AI tutor, they had to select two subjects to focus on. After some discussion, Regat and her team selected math and English.
Although math was the most challenging one to start with, but we're like, no, we want to include math in the first phase as well. So there are multiple reasons. One of these reasons is that these are two of the most important subjects, and also the two of the subjects that you'd have a lot of resources that you can utilize that are mapped to our curriculum as well. And we wanted to solve for a real problem. So math was a real problem for a lot of students and for LLMs as well. So how can we solve for that and start integrating this from the very beginning?
So how are they overcoming the challenge of incorporating a pedagogically correct math curriculum with a large language model?
We are working with our teachers as well. Like, we've come up with a way to assess the accuracy of the tool and the pedagogy as well, where we're asking our top teachers the same questions that we ask the tool to see what the answers are and how we can improve the engineering, the prompt engineering and the responses of the tool. And it has two parts. One part is when the students are proactive and they go and they ask questions. The tool itself is also proactive. So if you ask a question like a few weeks ago about something or the day before, and then, hey, you learned about X, now maybe it's best that you learn about Y, for example.
As we explore companies on the cutting edge of what AI is able to offer, one of the most striking takeaway in building an application on top of large language models and generative AI is the importance of investing in good data. We've heard over and over, garbage in, garbage out, but it is worth repeating. Good data is a core tenet of quality technology built off AI and large language models. It is also important to train the model, to ground it and fine-tune it so that it can provide recommendations in the right context. For the Ministry of Education, this meant leveraging the context from students and teachers.
One of the things we spend the most amount of time on is data. So, you know, not just student AI data, but really data that goes into the AI itself and the language models. We've invested a lot of money and time into really figuring out what's the right data that these models need. But more importantly, what's the right data that translates to the best outcomes for the students? You know, our North Star metric is learning outcomes. And, you know, we see certain types of data that may not be in a student's traditional curriculum, but is available online. And that sort of has a much better impact on the personalized model and how it's able to sort of curate responses. So we spend a lot of time on that. But really the key metric that we use and some of the really high quality data that we collect is from this context engine itself. So this context engine not only consists of a personalization model that's able to sort of accurately personalize responses. A student is learning about inflation and they're in Dubai, we're able to use shawarmas as an example of increasing prices. But also it has other models as part of this context engine. So we've got a mathematical reasoning model that's able to supply context on really complex math questions that a language model on its own wouldn't be able to answer today. But the combination of the context of another model plus the core LLM is able to sort of answer really accurately. So this, the context engine allows us to collect really high quality data. And after that point, it's really a flywheel where we're using this really complex engine to get the best sort of responses and respond to the students in the best manner possible. And that data goes back into the system to make it better. So, we had that initial stimulus. Today, we have over 5 million questions that are being asked by students. And we've seen that, you know, over the last few months. So that's over 5 million high quality data points that we can use to sort of improve the models rapidly. But the context engine is part of that sort of pipeline to create better quality data. And after that sort of initial stage, it's really a flywheel that keeps on going really in perpetuity.
You can't underestimate the importance of that context setting as you apply the large language models. The more context you can provide, the more adoption you will see, because the more personal the experience will be. And in this case, for a student, it is so important. If you're in Dubai and you're discussing inflation, it should be in the context of Dubai. If not, the tool doesn't seem very relevant to the end user. It is so important to think about what is going to be the engine that you use to provide context as queries come through. You need to be able to interpret the context of a given situation or query so that you can provide more relevant and accurate responses or outputs. But the context engine can only take the tool so far.
one of the things we're doing in-house right now is actually curating our own content based off certain frameworks or certain topics. We've built a pretty solid team around that fact as well. We are definitely grabbing information out. What we do really well is not just grab information out when the student asks, but really being able to predict what the student is going to ask and then finding the right context for it. So it's not like there's a team of 30 engineers who are just scraping content and figuring out a way to make this work. We built a system that's able to do this on the fly. So before a student even asks the question, we know exactly the right sort of context to supply the system. And then when the student does ask the question, you're getting a response in hundreds of milliseconds rather than tens of seconds, which is what you'd usually see if you took the approach of just purely grabbing context when the student asks a certain question.
For Regard and the Ministry of Education, one element of immense value is unlocking a lot of new knowledge and insights on learning patterns nationwide on the back end.
What is different about this tool as well is that in the back end, MOE has access to everything. We see every single student who has access to this tool and how they are performing. For example, if our grade 9 students are all asking questions about math concepts that are in grade 12, you would be able to see that. You would be able to see where your students are at and how the sequencing is matching the level of the students, and vice versa. If a student in grade 9 is still asking questions about concepts that they should have mastered in grade 4, you would be able to see that as well. And you would be able to see it, to analyze it, and to like adjust as needed if it's like a personal problem or if it's a system-wide policy insight that we get into our curriculum. And that's at the highest level for MOE with policymaking. And you could like generate insights about demographics, about different schools, about everything that you could think of. When is the best time for our students to learn? How do they ask the questions? How do they interact with the tool, etc.?
Having unprecedented insight into student learning pattern is exciting enough. I mean, in this new world where educators are able to gauge proficiencies, could we replace conventional standardized tests? But another important element is the real-time insights for teachers.
Even teachers now would be able to tell, they don't have to wait for the next test to know if their students are grasping the concepts or not. Are they with them in the classroom or not? You might have a student who's not active in the classroom, but you don't know if you might assume that maybe they're not following, or then you go to their data and see, no, actually the student is asking questions that are even more advanced than what I'm teaching right now. So that level of insight that we are providing the teachers with would help them even personalize the learning experience in the classroom.
Can you imagine how exciting and revolutionary this could be for educators? You do not have to wait for the test to understand where your students are. You can adapt your teaching so that when they actually get to the test, they can succeed. Because after all, it's about teaching and getting people to adopt the learnings, not to fail them on the test. What you see there is, will the AI tutor replace human teachers? Of course it won't, but that's the first reaction. That's the natural reaction. Is it complimenting me or is it aiming to replace me? You always have to deal with that kind of anxiety when you implement an AI system. And this is a great example here. Not only does this AI tutor help students, this tool and the valuable data it captures helps teachers be better teachers. Ensuring that the tool is safe for student use and age appropriate is a huge task. And that brings us to where they are now in the development process.
In the UAE, we have a teacher guideline or code of conduct for our teachers that we are applying on our AI tutor as well. We've done a few hackathons as well to challenge the tool internally, and we're taking this to the granular level of details. This is where we have the real test. We're working with our partner ASI and following these values that are very clear to us within our education system, to also make sure that it's integrated within the tool. And this is where the hackathons are important, because you put the tool in a real test. But we're following the same code of conduct that we apply on our teachers, the same guidelines that we have on our education system with our students, to make sure that this is completely safe. We're taking this as a challenge. We have another hackathon next week with our students, and their challenge is basically to hack the AI tool. ask, their job is to ask the tutor questions that they can't answer, or they might answer incorrectly, because we want to make this tool as relevant, as accurate, as safe as possible for our students. So we're seeing the impact, we're adjusting, then we'll launch again, and then we'll go back, and then we build our research and dashboard along with the tool as well. We see it as an experiment. It's like we are building a plane while we're flying at the same time. This is where we're at now. It's very exciting. It's a very promising tool. And I really look forward to seeing the results of the first phase and rolling it out on a national level.
Student safety is top of mind for Kudos too.
That's something we keep forefront at all times possibly. I mean, as soon as we first used the demo, even the really broken demo that we had towards the end of last summer, we could immediately tell that this was a technology that could be dangerous if not responsibly deployed. One of the key focuses that we've had and is really around security, scalability, and making sure that we adhere to all the responsible AI principles that are out there. So we spend a lot of time on that before any student even touches the platform. It goes through weeks or even months sometimes of red teaming and making sure that it's sort of aligned to principles and aligned to the curriculum and really making sure that's holistically as responsible of a deployment as it can be. And having a partner like Microsoft also allows us to focus on the other paradigm of security and scalability as well. You know, security is a really large part, especially when you're dealing with students who may be as young as 14, 13, and eventually even younger than that. Having a partner like Microsoft allows us to approach it from a tech perspective and an infrastructure perspective, but having a partner like the UAE Ministry of Education allows us to approach it from a pedagogical, educational, and really just a safety perspective, where is this responsibly being deployed? And you know, part of the pilot phase is exactly figuring out how to do that right at scale. As much as ASI believes in the responsible deployment of AI, one of the things we also believe in is the deployment of AI is almost a must. As scary as technology may seem at first sight, the benefits of the technology are incredibly immense. Me personally, I'm a big believer that we need to sort of accelerate the technology, maybe not to the point where it's taking over the world, but right up to that point where it's as helpful and beneficial as it can be. Nothing is used publicly until it's consistently red-teamed and tested thoroughly. We spend more time on testing sometimes than we actually do on development. Responsible AI principles and responsibility as a whole is something that we take very seriously, and we've taken very seriously even before.
So with safety top of mind, the building and testing this tool with a select number of students and clear impact measures. The process of red teaming involves assigning a team to intentionally misuse the tool and then report back about the vulnerabilities it discovered. It hasn't been rolled out at the national level. At the same time, they're focusing on research, coming up with the right methodology, the right way to assess the impact of this tool, making sure they're selecting a diverse sample of school and students who are joining the pilot or the soft launch of the tool, assessing the learning impact, and adding the measures required in the dashboard. And they're focused on answering questions from students and parents, and most crucially, teachers.
The first question that teachers asked was, what's going to happen to us? What does that mean for teachers? If you are working on an AI-based sort of teacher/tutor, what does that mean for us, for teachers, right? And the key answer to this technology is supposed to support us. It's going to support our teachers and students. It's not going to replace anyone. If anything, it will empower our teachers. We want to support our teachers. And one way to support them is to provide technology that would help them understand their students more and also support our students outside the classroom. Like at the end of the day, they're not using the tool in the classroom. This is a tool that would be accessible for them after school. Not everyone is privileged to get access to a tutor that would cost, I don't know, between $30 to $200, right? Or not everyone would have educated parents that would be able to teach them grade 8, grade 9 math or science, right? So this is what the tool is for.
For Kudos, the best way to get feedback is to show, not tell.
I mean, the best way to do it is let them use it. Yeah, I think using it as the best tool, when we've seen that hesitancy from teachers or from parents, we show them the data, right? We show them how it's truly helped students at scale. We give it to their own students or their children and let them use it and play around with it for a while. And teachers, parents, schools, they can immediately see the sort of change in attitude towards learning that the students sort of over time develop and build. And that's something that's really exciting, not just to us, but to the schools as a whole, right? If you're able to make learning truly fun and engaging, that in itself is really the hardest possible problem you can solve, right? If I was to name, out of all my friends, 5 people that truly enjoy learning, I'd probably have to spend some time thinking about it. So the best answer really I can give you is let them use it. In most technology, that's usually a pretty good answer, is let them use it. And if they, after they do use it, if they're still pretty hesitant, it's probably not the best kind of technology. Maybe you need to go back to the drawing board a little bit and play around with it and experiment a little bit more. And when we do hear that bad feedback or still continued hesitancy, we never blame that on the actual person that's using it or the parent or the teacher. That's completely our fault and our responsibility. The tool is designed and developed with students, teachers, and parents in mind. Right? We're not just a company that goes away for a few years and develops it with a bunch of engineers and we come back and tell them all to use it and force it upon them. Teachers are consistently part of the development from the beginning of the company. Students have always been a part of the company since the beginning. I mean, I was a student myself when I first used it. So when I first developed the company, so the end user has always been a part of the development process as a whole.
I just love his let them use it confidence. It's kind of infectious. You can't help but smile and cheer him on here. His well-placed confidence and pragmatism seems in perfect balance. He's confident because he's kept students and teachers in the loop of the development process from the beginning. Big change requires buy-in, and this project is getting a boost from the UAE and their forward-looking Minister of Education.
We saw an announcement by the Minister of Education, His Excellency Faisal, and we really were able to see that he was really forthcoming in his vision for AI. A lot of education systems in the world were very shy about AI. I mean, you saw sort of districts in the US banning AI, in fact, but the minister here was very forthcoming and very sort of outspoken about his willingness to embrace AI. That they're possibly the greatest partner that we could find, the greatest first government to work with. Their vision that we think like not a lot of people have in the world, but their vision was very straightforward and something that we could definitely assist in. And it was a vision that I had 2.5 years ago when I first founded the company.
It was that key message from His Excellency once ChatGPT was released and everyone was freaking out. I remember the tweets, everyone was like, what do we do now? Students are going to teach. Our learning outcomes are not as good to begin with. What's going to happen now, etc. And he was like, no, this tool is here. And even his first, so during that time when we announced the tool, the speech that he made was written by ChatGPT, and that was like early 2023. So that sends a very strong message, and definitely that has helped us a lot. But at the same time, because we are a government entity, there is also this responsibility that if we are going to introduce this technology to our students, there is that responsibility of making sure that this tool is 100% safe for them, right, to interact with. It's 100% aligned with our values in the UAE. It understands their language, the way they learn, etc. So that responsibility is also like comes with that flexibility and that like pioneering approach of yes, we will work with this technology, we will implement this, we will do this while keeping us grounded at the same time. And this is what you need, I think, the balance of both.
And they're already looking at impact beyond the UAE.
We're very conscious of the connectivity challenge that a lot of students face. We're lucky in the UAE that our students already have the bring your own device policy. So they have their own devices. And that's how our education system thrived within COVID. It was very easy for us to move fully online. But we're very conscious of this, even with that infrastructure in place. Because we're thinking of everyone within the ecosystem, right? And we're also thinking of what's beyond the UAE. We're pioneering, we're starting this initiative, and we want to help solve for global education challenges. And we're very conscious of that, specifically on the low bandwidth requirement for us with our students and being able to access this offline even. That's in one element. Another element is we're still looking into how are we going to roll it out to our students. We've talked a lot about the cost of hiring a private tutor. This will reduce the cost like 20 times from what on average a student would pay for a private tutor. And then you'll have students who might actually need this and wouldn't be able to pay, for example, for the subscription fee. And this is what we are solving for as MOE right now. How can we come up with this model where students can have access? Is it going to be that everyone needs to subscribe? Are we going to secure a subscription for all of our students, some of our students who are in need? That's still a discussion for us, but for sure, it's going to solve for a lot of the challenges when it comes to lowering the cost on everyone. So we are already in discussions with a few government entities and ministries of education who are interested in experimenting with this tool and introducing it to their own markets.
They are still in development of the tool and rolling it out on a national level. But what has been very clear for a while and has become even clearer in the last few months since the introduction of ChatGPT, is that the way students are learning is changing already.
If we want the education system to actually be relevant and help our students in their learning and development, we need to adapt. Maybe a lot of government entities are and ministries are like afraid of what this technology would mean for them, but it's even ministries and even like the education system as we know it now needs to invent itself. Otherwise, we wouldn't be relevant. A lot of people are already talking about how relevant it is in terms of what you're learning in school versus what isn't happening in real life. And this is a conversation that we've been having for decades. Do you want to distance yourself more from your students and the people that you're supposed to serve, or do you want to be relevant and help them as well, which is the purpose of all educators, right?
So what advice does Kudus have for education leaders interested in taking the plunge into this technology?
I would say just go for it. You know, I think one of the biggest barriers that people my age have, or at least when I'm speaking to friends, is for some reason they think that, you know, to build a company or to build a product, you need to be this super genius or you need to be, you know, Steve Jobs. But the truth is there's nothing in the world that's made by people any smarter than you are, right? You look at the roads, you look at the cars, you look at the stop signs, they've all, you know, been developed and built by people that were very similar to you at one point. As much as you don't think that's true, it probably is true to a very high extent. So really just going for it and then just making sure you continue going for it. I mean, when we first started the company, you know, today what we do in the company looks very different to what we did when we first started. But we just kept going at it. We kept, you know, iterating. We kept listening to our users. We kept sort of iterating based on what our users said. And we never sort of gave up. And we built the right team to do that. The biggest advice I can give is just, you know, going for it and then continually going for it, after the fact that maybe you've broken down once or you failed once, just keep going for it and eventually you'll succeed. It's very cliche, but it is the sort of biggest barrier I see. And I try to convince all of my friends to start companies or build products. And they're always like, oh, I need to be a super genius to create an app, or I need to be a super genius to create a company. And you know, the truth is I'm not a super genius. And most of the founders I know, you know, as smart as they are, they're, you know, they're not really super geniuses. They're just people that were incredibly determined and very, very enthusiastic about a problem that they wanted to solve. So I think that's all the qualities you need. And if you go for it, you'll likely sort of remove any doubt that you may have.
It's amazing to see the possibilities with AI. And if you were to think about topics and scenarios, I don't think any one of us would think learning, which is such a personal experience, would be a good target for AI. But if you look at the Ministry of Education in the UAE and the approach they're taking, they're really embracing AI to enable all of their students and tackle a very big problem for the country, which is tutors is not affordable for all, but they want to create equitable opportunity for all citizens in the UAE. So they're embracing AI and they're not forgetting that at the center, it's about the humans, the students, the parents, the teachers. And they're ensuring that what they're building, this AI system, not only is providing great outcomes on the learning path for all those students, but that people are comfortable with it and then being very responsible in their approach, just testing it, then ensuring each step of the way that this is aligned with the values that they've, from the start, defined. It is not about replacing humans. It is about complementing and helping everybody at all levels. This is a true way to make learning accessible to all.
Thank you for listening to Pivotal. I'd love to hear your story and your pivotal moment, so don't hesitate to follow me and share on LinkedIn. Audience information is also available in the show notes. Our show is produced by Large Media, that's L-A-R-J Media. Special thanks to Lin Yang and our partners at We Communications.